hope all of you have a 3-page handout to which will be added a 4th page and then a 5th page. And if I had had my druthers, there would have been another 3 pages, meaning a translation of all the Hebrew, but, you know, I just didn't have time. So let me give you now, I'm handing out, there may not, well, we'll see. This is another page, actually, let me take one for myself. Okay, then as a summary, there'll be yet another page. For the newcomers, there are the main handout is right here. Let me actually ask you all 2 things. First of all, how many of you are at all familiar with Hasidic writings? Okay. How many of you have seen anything that I've written on the Psalic? Okay. And
what's your name?
What's my name?
Stay in the middle person.
Well, why are you here?
Okay,
I am Yaakov.
I'm
Yaakov Bellman. Thank you. The final question, although I suspect I see it already, but it's a question I always ask. How many people prefer Svaradit and how many people prefer Ashkenazi? Let me see hands. Svaradit? Oh, really? Oh, okay. You realize, of course, this is like a Chil Hashem. We're talking about a Hasidic Rebbe's thought, and we're going to be doing it in Sfaradit. You know, that's kind of, you know, I don't know what he would think. I don't know that he would know what to think. All right, well, you know what? We will see. I myself am wondering. Okay. All right. Let me then the additional handout page is even more pertinent if you're not familiar with Hasidic writings. First of all, the style is a regular rabbinic style, which means basically a mixture of Hebrew and Aramaic, and a mixture of passages from all over the place. And because Reb Tzadik was really a big baki, he knew almost everything that was to know that he would have considered worth knowing. Talking about Babel, Yerushalmi, all the Midrashim, talking about the Zohar especially and its various parts, and even odds and ends of Midrashim, Hechalot literature, things that were published by the Wissenschaft scholars in Germany and in Austria during the 19th century, he was familiar with that too, at least to some extent. And that's what he gives you. But what I want to do is I want to point something else out. We're not talking about a scholarly piece of research here. Not in terms of Reb Tzadik. What Reb Tzadik is doing is presenting a view of the world, a view of the universe, a view of creation, a view of history, and a view of human beings' personal history. Based on the Korah, based on Jewish sources, that don't necessarily, even when combined, prove the point he's trying to make. That's not the point. This is an interpretation of sources. I think that's a very compelling interpretation, not because it's based on those sources, because it basically helps us navigate a very complex and difficult world. Okay, that's what I want you to keep in mind. And along those lines, if you'll take the one-page handout that I added to the 3 pages, I hope all of you have. Does anybody not have? Well, then, this is the one page.
This is the one from tradition.
This is the one from tradition. Well, if you don't, then please, you know, kind of look on with your neighbor, because they made copies of whatever they made. You know, I think, I'm not sure how many people are here. They made 100 copies of the other and 80 copies of this, so we may be stuck somewhere in between. Since I have a translation here, I'm going to go with the translation instead of reading the Hebrew and then translating. So let me read this and let me point out why I want this. I'm using this as kind of an introduction. By the way, I assume everybody can hear me?
Yes.
Because I shouldn't have raised my voice when I said that. Okay. As is known, whenever anyone understands any matter clearly, the light of that gate of knowledge becomes open to the world and is open to all. For this is the principle that God established for all the generations, even though they continually decline in ability. This is an extremely important point. Despite the fact of Nitkatnu Adorot, despite the fact that, you know, that the official rabbinic line is the evolution of the species, Reb Tzadik has made room here for the idea that later generations can know things that earlier generations didn't. This is actually not a new discussion. This was a discussion already in the 17th century among non-Jews. Newton was actually part of that discussion. Yeah, even before the 17th. It was in the 13th and 12th century, too. Right, exactly. And he got it from St. Bernard of Clairvaux. Right, exactly. This is Atzav, on the shoulders of giants. However, Reb Tzadik has a somewhat different take on it, but it's basically the same idea. Despite the fact, he says, and this, by the way, he says that he got this, he says this in Preet Tzadik, he got this from his Rebbe, the Ishbitzer, and he said that at the time it was quite a chiddush to him. You know, he didn't really understand it, but now he understands it, and I'll explain in a moment for you why that has to be. In other words, despite the fact that we are not on the same level, spiritual level, if you will, intellectual level, if you take it down to kind of the vulgar, you know, there are many people who believe that we're shorter than previous generations were, despite the fact that, you know, all the evidence seems to indicate the other way around. Despite that, we can know things that earlier generations didn't know. So that already is a big kiddush. And he says that once a gate of knowledge is opened, once somebody makes, you know, a breakthrough in method, in derech halimud, or however it is, then everybody can go through. There's one person who's a pioneer. You got the Reb Chaim, and then you got the Reb Baruch Ber, et cetera, you know, down to Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, down to Reb Yechiel Rosenzweig. In other words, once somebody establishes a certain shita, a certain derech halimud, a certain approach, a certain methodology, and that doesn't have to be in Jewish studies. It could be deconstructionism. You know, it could be Foucault. It could be Ricoeur. It could be, you know, whoever it is. And other people, it resonates with people. Then they go through that gate of knowledge. They apply that method, and then they get further results. By the way, please note, Reb Tzadik, I should say, since most of you don't know who he is. Reb Tzadik was a Rebbe. He was actually He was born a Misnaged. He was a Mitnaged. He was actually related to the Gra, to the Vilna Gaon. He was born in 1823 in Latvia, and in his 20s, he became a Hasid. Or became a Hasid. Really, I can't. That far we can't go. As given a Chusid. As Gavon Achosid. Anyway, a follower of the Ishbitzer, and at the last 11 years of his life, meaning the 11 years before 1900, he became one of the Ishbitzer Rebbes. All the years of so-called silence, he was continuously writing. We have now published 10 volumes of his writings, or 5 volumes of his writings, and another 5 volumes that was taken down from his Tish Torah. There are more than 10 Svarim, because one volume can include several different books. All in all, they reflect a really consistent view of the world, although they differ in details, because we're talking about things that are written over more than 50 years. But basically, once he understood the world in the terms that I'm going to explain it in today, you know, he was pretty consistent. He just applied it to different things in different ways. Then he continues and says, "For once these lights are made available to every generation by the great ones among the sages of Israel," in other words, these intellectual pioneers, "they are not sealed up. They don't become just an esoteric, you know, study. They remain open forever and become fixed laws for all Israel." Therefore, even though later generations are inferior to earlier ones, they nevertheless maintain their awareness of knowledge as dwarves on the shoulders of giants. And they themselves continue the process of opening of new gates. Even though they themselves are greatly inferior in comparison to their forebears, their insights are more profound. That was those italics, of course, mine, but I think very much justified, for they have already passed through the gates opened for the earlier generations. Now, just think for a moment why he has to say this, or what brought him to say this. Because the truth of the matter is, this is not such an amazing idea. Any Kabbalist, anybody who believes that Kabbalah has something to teach us, and you don't have to be a Kabbalist to believe that, and you don't have to be a Chassid to believe that, you can even be a modern Orthodox Jew and believe that. And I'll tell you exactly why that is, and you'll learn through what we're doing why that is. Because Kabbalah allows us to understand the world in a way that's much more nuanced than opposing Shitot, the Mitnagdim, for example. Because it allows us to understand the complex intermixture of good and evil, of light and darkness in the world as we perceive it. Okay? And our hero has feet of clay, and the villain is not so terrible. Or at least he can be so terrible, but the end result is that no matter how bad he is, there may even be some good coming out of his evil deeds. It's that idea, I think, that really allows us, which is the idea that Kabbalah contributes to our understanding of the world that is extremely important. Okay, so now let's go now to the handout, the basic handout, the three pages. And I don't know if I hadn't decided whether I should give this to you before or after, but I'll give it to you before. What I did last night is I produced a one-page summary in Hebrew and in English of my message today. So I'm about to pass that out. So you can cheat. Because the idea is you're not going to get a test on this, but I hope at the end of the hour you'll understand the world a lot better than you did when you got in here. Although some of you actually will have probably understood the world just as well because of your own experiences, but you'll know that your understanding of the world conforms to that of some Jewish sources. Okay. So let's start. I give you the sources. This is from all over the place, and I put them together in a way that I hope is a systematic exposition of what he has to say. So the basic principle that we start with, if you look at the very top of page one, HaTorah hi mapat ha'olam. The Torah is the map of the world, and he bases this on a very well-known midrash at the beginning of Bereshit Rabbah, which is also in the Zohar, which is that when God came to create the world, he looked at the Torah in order to know what to do. First, he separated light and darkness, etc., etc., as we have in Maaseh Bereshit. So that Maaseh Bereshit is the blueprint of the universe. But Reb Tzadik is going a step further, and this is a step that his Rebbe already took, the Yishvitzer took, Reb Mordechai Yosef Lerner. And that is that the Torah is not only the map of the universe, but what we would call, in the 20th century, or now the 21st century, the model of the universe. Almost, not like a mathematical model, but it is in some respect a model of the universe. And we will talk about the specific ways in which it is a model as we go through, in terms of understanding human history, national history, and personal history. And he would say even further, understanding, as a matter of fact, he does say it, the creation of the universe, as we'll see. When I thought I had more time, I thought we'd do more in terms of the actual text. But since we don't, I would rather make the points I want to make than get through the text. So let's concentrate on them. So the Torah is a model of the universe. What is recorded in the Torah is therefore important because, among other things, it helps us understand the universe. And the universe, number one, the Torah is a commentary on the universe. In other words, in order to understand events that occur, when you're reading the New York Times or whatever else, And you know, you look at the Torah, and vice versa. The universe is a commentary on the Torah. You use your experience to understand Torah. And so therefore you can understand when the Rashbam talks about his grandfather, Rashi, and he says that Rashi had admitted in conversation with his grandson, I estimate that the Rashbam was about 15 when his grandfather was Niftar, that actually he would have to write new commentaries in light of the pshatot hamitchatshim b'chol yom, the new understandings of pshat. Now there are two ways of understanding it, and even if one of them is more probable, I'm going to take the other one. The one that's more probable is that we now spend more time studying pshat, the simple meaning of the text, than our ancestors did, and so therefore we can understand the pshat better than they did. That's probably what Rashbam meant. But it's not a contradiction to say that the Rashbam also said, as we experience more of human history, we can look at the Torah with more knowing eyes. Because what the prophets foresaw, we can look back on. So we can understand better what the prophets meant than the people in our own time. Because we've seen their prophecies come to pass. Maaseh Avot Siman Levanim. Okay. Given the fact that the Torah is a model of the universe, what is the principle that we want to, in this case, we want to extract from the Torah and apply to our understanding of the universe? So take a look at the second paragraph, the second makor. He said, "Haseda asher yisad Hashem itparach b'vriyah b'reishah chashulcha v'hada nehora." He said that the essential principle that God established in the creation of the universe is the following principle: first darkness and then light. And this, he means this in every way possible. He says, "Kachu v'chol yivot olam, ein lecha shum or mitgalel mitoch hachoshech hakadum lo." Please note, this is a universal principle. He isn't fudging here. He's not being academic. It would seem that, most cases, no, he's telling you the whole thing. He's saying this is what it is in all the history of the world. There is nothing, there is nothing that is, no light that is revealed except through darkness. No light that is revealed except through darkness. Derech Mashal, Matan Torah. And of course, before God created the light, what was there? Right? The very first act of creation was creating light after darkness. And let's say, creating light out of darkness. Matan Torah kadam lo yitziat Mitzrayim. Okay? In order, before they got the Jews got the Torah at Sinai, they had yitziat Mitzrayim. But of course, what he means is more than that. What does he mean? Shibud Mitzrayim. They had to be enslaved in Egypt before they got the Torah, before they understood what they were getting. Without that experience, they wouldn't have either accepted it or they wouldn't have understood what they were accepting. And he goes on and gives other examples. And of course, they're all, you know, if we were doing this, if this were a course in logic, we would all say, post hoc propter hoc, you know, you can't say that something precedes something else, therefore it's the cause of something else. Logically, that's not so. But for Reb Tzadik, the Torah, remember, is a commentary on the world. So what the Torah chooses to record in a certain order is telling you something about the way things occur. It's not just happenstance. The reason, the fact that it's recorded in the Torah means there is some causal relationship. And take a look in the middle. Echein kol davar mitoch choshech yotze or, and this is now the next step. Everything of darkness, light comes out, and what's the nature of that light? Shehu mamash hepech, or hepech, or to hachoshech, bein bedorot, bein bepratein nefashot. Okay? This, every word of this line, the sentence, is important. It is absolutely, mamash, the opposite of the darkness. Whether bedorot, either in terms of the history of a generation, bein bepratein neshach nefashot, whether in an individual's history. Okay, in other words, if you have a failure, if you have difficulty, it's for a reason. And that reason is that you will emerge from that. You know, it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger, as they say. It's more than that. Without the difficulty, you wouldn't have gotten to appreciate and to be able to get to the light. If you don't have a kasha, you won't have a teretz. Okay? I won't, you know, there are parts of the Jewish world to the right of us who think that, you know, unlike what I was taught in yeshiva, when a kasha starts me, if you don't die from a kasha, that you will die. You know, there is something attributed to a rebbe who I respect on other grounds, not in this, in other respects as well, who once point gave an answer to the following question. The question everybody asked, and many of you may have asked the Seder just a little while ago, why is the Chacham and the Rasha, why do they have the same pasuk? Okay? I mean, after all, how can you compare the Chacham to the Rasha given the same pasuk? So the Satmar Rebbe, the Friedrich Satmar Rebbe, that's all, supposedly said because the Chacham, well, we'll do it his way, the Chacham started asking questions. And in that respect, he's like the Rasha. That's not a Jewish way of looking at things. My favorite Rav story is somebody once challenged him in Shir and said, how do you know that? And he gave a wonderful answer. The answer is a clear and logical mind. For those of you who are into Gemara, a Svara is equivalent to a Deraisa.
Okay.
Excuse me?
You are a Litvak.
So,
yes,
now, so, but please note, whatever you're going to fail is going to be the preparation for the success. The confusion is going to be a preparation for the insight that comes. Hepech, or hefech. Okay, it's the opposite. In other words, the failure is going to point the way to the success. It's not just any old failure. Why? Because it means if you failed at something, you tried it. That means your shorish neshama, the roots of your soul, go in that direction. This time didn't work. Ein Adam Omeid. You do not understand Divrei Torah until you stumble over them first. First, you got to try it. It doesn't work. You try that. It doesn't work. You try that. It doesn't work. And then you find the right way. So that's why, psychologically, it makes a lot of sense as well. That the failure points the way to success. And if you understand that, it, of course, gives you a very different way of looking at, you know, what happens you in your own lives. Those of you who you know, whose hair is a bit like mine, you probably already know it yourselves. Those who are younger, probably some of you know it. Some of you may have Baruch Hashem not yet gotten there, or maybe we shouldn't say Baruch Hashem, but you know, it's good to know it beforehand. Okay, now that we are going to work out what that really means. So look at page 2. And here he says, "Ha'adam eino omeid tamid b'seida ha'matzav, or rather, u'matzav echad. V'yesh lo tadir aliyot v'yiridot k'noda l'chol hasam derachav, or hasham derachav, probably. A person is no longer in one place. He's continually moving. And if you want to put, you know, judge him." He's up and down, he has ups and downs, either in terms of spirituality, in terms of his intellect, in terms of his moral compass, and so on.
We're talking
about individuals now. He says Ha'adam, person. And so he always has V'yesh lo tadir aliyot v'yiridot. He has ups and downs. You know that, as is known to anybody who evaluates his own way in life. And
ושכינתה. דירח לא מאיזה כנסת ישראל שמקבלים אורן מן החמה, שמש שמגן השם נסרק. And this, he says, is the mashal, the metaphor is the moon. And the Jews are compared to the moon. The moon waxes and wanes, and the Jews wax and wane. And we're still around. I'm sure you've all seen, I should have taken it. Do you remember that wonderful editorial that Mark Twain wrote about the Jews? You know, we're still around. We're still around because we wax and wane. And he makes it, Reb Tzadik makes a distinction between Jews and non-Jews. The truth of the matter is the principle is so universal, I think it applies to non-Jews as well. And if you ever hear some, you know, Christian preachers on a Sunday afternoon, they're basically telling you what I'm telling you, as Rebbetzin Jungreis is probably telling you also. I haven't heard it, but I get the feeling. And she's right. And, you know, and there, this is something that we all know. From failure comes success. And the only time failure doesn't yield success is when you let it get you down. That's on the individual level. Mm-hmm. Now let's take a look how that works on the national level. This means we really need better recognition. Which I know because I teach in this room actually. So he says, "V'chol agaluyot v'hayisurin," all the exiles and the persecutions, the sufferings that the Jews have experienced throughout their history. "Hu rak al zeh," it's only for this reason. "The halot kol inyanei olam hazeh l'rumo shel olam," in order to raise all the matters of this world to the highest level. Now, please note, this is an extremely important point. This is, again, written in the 19th century, when Gretz's history had been written, and many of the early histories that of which the 20th century histories are based on, written. This was the heyday of what Salo Barone in the 30s, the great historian, called the lachrymose theory of Jewish history. That Jewish history is just a succession of persecutions and persecutions and persecutions and persecutions. But Tzadik rejects all that. That's not what it's about. He's also rejecting something else, which I wish the Sofner Rebbe had understood. And that is that we're not only here to be punished. It's not just Bavel Noseinu Harabim. It's not just that. There's a reason for the Gullus. There's a reason for the persecutions. There's a reason we're scattered all around the world. And as a matter of fact, right now, we'll read this in a minute, but I just point out to you, the answer is right there on the front page of the Times every single day. Look at us in exile, and look at the Arabs who were not in exile. And the difference is amazing. A quarter of all the Nobel Prize winners are Jews, et cetera, et cetera. So let's take a look at what he says.
That's why we're persecuted.
Well, that's why we're scattered, not persecuted, but that's why we're scattered. Right, exactly. In other words, we are, as a matter of fact, I found this, a friend of mine sent it this to me, a friend of mine sends me these things on the internet, and it's, you know, this actually goes very, very, very well. Heaven is where, okay? The police are British. The chefs are Italian. The mechanics are German. The lawyers are French, and it's all organized by the Swiss. Hell is where. The police are Germans. The chefs are British. The mechanics are French. The lovers are Swiss. And it's all organized by the Italians. Okay. In other words, what's the point here? The point is we have been, it sometimes occurs to me, I can't prove this, but you know, Libi Omerli, or Libi Omerli, I don't know if you caught that oi there. What if you ever looked at the Haim Zimmel, Olam Shalom's book, Rabbi Doctor, Haim Zimmel's Ashkenazim and Sephardim, any of you ever looked at it, one of the things, Ashkenazim and Sephardim it's called. Zimmel's. One of the differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, which of course now looks, you know, it seems very, very important, and it is that Ashkenazim tend to be machmirim, and Sephardim tend not to be. They're not necessarily mekilim, but they're not machmirim. Now, in other words, the Ruach HaChumra is only lately, I can tell you, you know, as the, you know, let's say the Syrian communities become yeshivas and so on and so forth, you know, but that's not their usual way of doing things. And it's occurred to me, who knows, but if our sojourn in Germany led us in that direction. I don't know. And that doesn't mean it's bad, by the way. I'm just, it tells you. In other words, what we're saying is the Jews got all kinds of things from all kinds of people, because each people has its own national character. Okay. So let's go to the next paragraph. And this works on what we talked about, Hefech. It says, Kefi ha-maleh ha-malah v'ha-shlemut sheyesh la'adam kach yesh lu'umato chisaron kinegdo mamash kefi erko. Okay, in other words, the perfection that a human being has, if he has a perfection, presumably, you know, it, one thing, you know, even a boxer in that respect, he's, you know, is it. In that regard, there's also a lack. A chisaron kinegdo mamash kefi erko. Ki mimot chet adam harishon hakol me'orav tov v'ra. Because in the days of the sin of Adam, everything is mixed up, good and evil, this against the other. I wish I had time, we don't have the time, but Zelu Matzeh is not just a phrase. It's one of the key phrases in understanding Kabbalah and understanding Reb Sadat's Hasidut. Because it means that, you know, there are two worlds, the world of course, emanation in terms of Kabbalah and the world of evil, but, you know, but more than that, it means, you know, Jewish knowledge, non-Jewish knowledge, and they go hand in hand, or not hand in hand, but they go stage by stage. The watershed in Jewish intellectual history occurs not with the Churban HaBayit, but with the conquest by Alexander the Great of the Persian Empire, and the victory of Hellenism over, you know, what came before, the Semitic cults and so on and so forth, and the end of prophecy, the beginning of Greek philosophy and the end of prophecy. That's where it happens, and that's zeh l'umat zeh. The two, in other words, when prophecy ends, Hellenistic philosophy and logic begin. And that's when Torah Shebaal Peh begins. Because Torah Shebaal Peh is Torah as understood through the lens of Hellenistic understanding of the world. A combination of the two. And he says then, and this of course works individually and it works collectively, V'chol sheyesh lo chisaron atzum hu kli gam kein l'shleimut buflag im yiskeh. And everything that has, everyone, and every group that has a powerful failing, that is the means, the kli, the vessel, for tremendous perfection if you are zocheh, if you merit it. In other words, it's not, there's a reason, there's an intellectual reason, there's a social reason, intellectual, historical reason for him to say that. Because his Rebbe, the Meshiloach, talks about, and this is one of the controversial points of the Meshiloach's teaching, and, you know, at the time it was very controversial, it's still controversial. He believes there's no such thing, and Reb Sadik does not agree with his Rebbe on this, or at least explicitly he doesn't agree with it. Whether internally he does, I don't know. There's no such thing as free will. It's not your deeds that you determine. It's just how much you fight against
their Yetzer. Okay? So Zimri ben Salu was actually a tzaddik, but it was written, so to speak, that he would do that avera and he would be killed. But what he's supposed to do is he's supposed to resist it with all his might, and then if it happens, you know, then it's not his fault, because there's a reason in God's plan for that to happen. Okay, that's not what Reb Tzadik is saying. That's why he's saying im yizkeh, if you merit it, you have to work, and he's not, you know, and he's bringing free will in that way. Okay, it's not like he's saying it. Don't read me the way my Rebbe said it. This is what I'm saying.
If you work hard enough, even right. If you don't succeed, it's okay?
Yes. And he would say that if you work hard enough, it's probably going to happen, because God is not necessarily going to, you know, trip you up.
Not preordained.
Right. It's not. Some things are not preordained. National things may be preordained. So
there's no free will,
that is your Yetzer. No, I'm saying that he's distancing himself from his Rebbe that way. That's a whole other discussion.
Okay.
He gets the business of the map of the world from him also, by the way. I'm not going to try to get you to do a dissertation on.
I'd rather.
Bottom of the page. And therefore, he says, you should remember, be'et kishalon ha'adam, yeda, she'be'oto et, hu hachana le'ota davar le'tov. Therefore, at the time of your failure, you should know that at that very time, that is a preparation for the good thing that's going to happen. Okay? And at that very moment, at the moment of failure, if you realize it and you do the right thing, you can rise to the next level, or to a greater level, even beyond that next level. And not only that, and here there's something of his Rebbe in it. Kifi godel hachet, according to the great, you know, the heinousness of the sin. Okay. In other words, again, that's why, because the failure, the depth of failure, you know, tells you what the success in the future is going to be. So therefore, the greater the sin, the greater the tzikut that comes out of it. Shehayetze misito kachu godel hatova shiuchal liklot az. Okay, because of the greatness of the sin, the heinousness of the sin, that's the opportunity for becoming greater, is that much more. Right, right. It's more than that. Here he's actually on pretty firm ground. This is not, you know, for reasons that are obvious. Most rabbis don't emphasize this. You won't hear this in the drasha. I don't think. And if you have heard it, tell me where, because I want to become a member of that show. Where? Yeah. But I'm talking about a shul today. Yeah.
You were first talking about failures. Attempts at failure. Now switch to sin.
Yeah, because failure is sin. Sin is failure. In other words, there are other kinds of failure, but that's one of the failures.
Well, I was thinking that failure is something worthwhile, and then hold on a moment, and you'll hear.
There's a Gemara he himself brings from Sukkandun Bet that says Kol ha-gadol mechavero yitzro gadol hemenu. If you've heard that, whoever is greater than his fellow human being, his Yetzer Hara, his evil inclination, is greater than his fellows. Okay? So now if you wonder why it is these, you know, et cetera, you know, you read the Times too, you know, why this, or, you know, or you read the blogs, you know, if that's why. In other words, because, let's say the imaginative faculty is greater, if you want to talk philosophically. Excuse me? Yeah. He is a parade example for Ibsadi. In Takanat HaShavin, yes, absolutely. You're right on target. Rabin HaMelech, he said. In other words, if you're greater, so then your capacity for evil is greater, or imagining evil. And therefore, if you turn your imagination in the right way, your capacity for good is also greater. Okay? So if you go to page top of page 3, and now we go down to, you know, we get to kind of a, this is part of his intellectual history. The arcane, he says, Nirali, the Shoresh Kohen, the Hananfashot, the Bnei Yisrael, Kululot, the Chibur HaMishnah. Seems to me, he says, that the root of all the souls of the Israelites, of the Jews, are included in the Mishnah. And I think that means in Torah Shebaal Peh as a whole. You'll see in a minute why. V'chein klulim ba kol davar, kol divrei Torah sheyikletu ha'idei ha'galuyot bein umot ha'olam. He says, and included in that is all the divrei Torah that will be absorbed through galus, by the exiles among the nations. In other words, divrei Torah are absorbed by us through galut, among the nations. We get our divrei Torah also from them. Okay, I won't go into the Kabbalah here. The Kabbalah is basically that they wouldn't exist except there's got to be something good, and we are there to get the good. Okay? The adyadei zeh hu kibbutz hagaluyot, and this is what it means, the ingathering of the exiles. Now, what that means, Kabbalistically speaking, all the holy sparks that were scattered throughout the universe are now being gathered by us through galut. And there, again, there's a Gemara Pesachim. I'm not going to do it. You know, if you go through it, you'll see it there. The Chol Galuyot, the Daat Kanfei Aretz Hayal Letzorach Zeh. That was for this purpose. This need. The Al Yedei HaChataim Nikletu Harbe Nitzotot Kedoshot Bishlat Adam Adam. So follow Rava. This is a complicated. I'm just going to do the first part of it. Through the sins, many holy sparks are absorbed. Okay, through our being in Galut and our contact with the nations, the non-Jews, many sparks are absorbed because the sparks got there too. And our job is to reabsorb them into Kedusha. The Gufa Kedusha. As a matter of fact, here, CC here, later on, look in the... let's go on to the next bold phase. V'natati lahem lev echad v'ruach hadasheh ten b'kibachem v'esarati lev ha'evin b'psaram v'nasati lahem lev basar. In other words, I will give them a new spirit among them, and I will remove the stone heart from their flesh, and I'll give them a flesh heart. He says, "Ki ayin umot, the 70 nations, kol achat yesh lo koach miyuchad, ofi shel uma, ofia shel uma zu." In other words, all the 70 nations have their own particular national characteristic or characteristics. Okay. Excuse me. Yes. Don't, and there's Hegel in here too.
That's right. Well, that's
yes, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. It has their own national characteristics, you know, whether it's order, orderliness, whether it's, you know, emotion, however it is, you know, and we're the complete human being is, of course, not one national characteristic, but all of them together. Okay, so if we go too much in one direction, that's not right. We've got to be rounded. And he says, Haaretz, rather, I'm sorry, he said, V'amuzal. So, you know, our sages said, Lo galu ela kedei lo hosif gerim. The only reason that the Jews went into Galut was to increase, to add converts to the Jewish people. Perush, the meaning is, the goy kol echad yesh lo koach miyuchad. That's not nufuchad, that's miyuchad. I type this, so, please forgive me. Sh'ein yachol lishanoto klal vadai. Okay, every non-Jew, each one has his own particular strength, power, talent that he can change at all, and therefore somebody who converts from that nation has the same power that cannot be changed at all, but he brings it to the Jewish people. Okay, v'zeh nitosaf b'galut shekol tin koach eretz amim kol makom b'frat. Okay, each one, you know, gives us that talent. And there's one other point here. He says, Kol makom b'frati, he says, ha'ikshut v'halev, ha'evin, eze davar v'inyan prati ha'miyuchad lo. He says, the reason we can do this is because we are not hard-hearted. Okay? In other words, galut softens us up to absorb Kedusha wherever it comes. Okay? We're not coming, in a hard-hearted way where we won't accept. If we're impervious to outside influences, that's not the point. That doesn't mean we should all become conservative Reformed Jews. I mean, but you understand what I'm saying. I think we certainly should be modern Orthodox and not to the right. I didn't start out here. You might kind of, but I'm very happy where I am. So in other words, if you understand that what our purpose is, then you understand, how we're supposed to, view history, and how we're supposed to view our own individual lives, and the events that happen, the good and the bad things. And, the idea, we can do this in a very existentialist way. We have to find tafkid, we will find our purpose, et cetera, we work towards that, et cetera. Our essence precedes our existence rather precedes our essence. All this kind of stuff, we can do Sartre, that kind of stuff, but that's, and we can do the Rav too for that matter. But, we're doing Reb Tzadik. But it works the same way. So in other words, what Reb Tzadik does is he provides us with a way of looking at the world and our own lives and the universe and human history and intellectual history in particular. And for Jews, by the way, we have the reputation and the surveys are on the ground of being the smartest people around. So intellectual history is important for us. This is the way of understanding the world and, as I said, the world, the universe, and our own individual histories. And that's why I've presented it today. And now you understand also the role of Geula, the role of Shibut, the role of Galut, the role of Shibut Mitzrayim, Yetziat Mitzrayim, and why Pesach is such an important holiday. Even people who don't, keep other things, keep Pesach, of course they do the Yamin Ha'arim because everybody wants to be saved. Lest you think that this is some kind of esoteric doctrine. Okay, this is the first sefer that was ever published of his Sikkat HaTzaddik, which has I have quotes of it somewhere. This copy, this literal copy here, I don't know how much it cost. This is a copy I have from my wife's grandfather. Okay, who was not one a Rosh Yeshiva, he was not a shul rav, he was a Yehudei Sefer, he learned, but he was not a special, but this he had. Okay, now you understand why. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions, feel free. We still have a little time. I wanted to have a little time for questions.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
It seems to me that the attempt to rationalize Goles as something which has positive sides to it is not a biblical idea, not even the latest.